Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is April the 10th, 2014, and today we're going to be talking about how to do sort of a mock session or a few mock sports psychology sessions to show you how I do a session with a client. And I think Gio and a few people had requested that earlier to do a role play to see, how that works, and also, you can, it's your chance to get some help for yourself if you'd like on a particular sport or a lifestyle, anything to do with fitness or health or eating habits, work habits, injury, any of those sort of things that might be relevant to, our work in coaching. So let me just do a sound check first. Is everyone, can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay,
yeah.
Am I loud enough? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. So that's great. I know, Greg, you volunteered, said you'd, could be for the mock session here with an injury that you have?
Yes.
Yeah,
I
okay,
have.
Great. And, and Alex, if you've got something too, anything that you'd like to work on, you could be a volunteer as well if
sure.
you want.
Sure, yeah, of course. Yeah.
You could just think about something that you want to work on.
Okay.
So, I'll just mention I've almost have the PECI, the level 2, completed here, the website, so I'll send you more information about that people have been asking about, a level 2 course training that's available to you that you can get a discount on the course fee. So I'll just email you more information on that this week and next week. And so that should be starting shortly, this week or early next week. So, for more advanced training and all. So let's see. Why don't we start with Greg? And you can also, do any of you have any questions or any, things that are burning questions that you need answered as far as your coaching or practice or anything right now?
Not for me.
No, I'm good at this point. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks for Greg. You've been doing a great job of sending in your assignments and stuff. That's great. That's fantastic. You've been doing really well. So Greg, why don't you go ahead and let's pretend like we're doing a session here.
Okay.
And I can show you how I would work with a client, and maybe I could do also a visualization, a mock, visualization audio type thing that I would make for you to show people how I put that together and all.
Okay.
So Greg, let's imagine you just called, and we're doing the first session here. Or actually, one thing that might be better is imagine that you're just calling for the first time, and
okay.
And you're inquiring about sessions, and just telling me what you're what you'd like help with first, a first
okay.
encounter on the phone.
Okay, well, the reason for my call today is I understand that you can help people or athletes work through some mental blocks with due to injuries that they have sustained in their sport.
That's right. Yeah. So what can you tell me about what your you've got an injury. What sport are you in now?
Yes, I'm a tournament racquetball player, and last May, in one of my tournaments, I dove for a ball to retrieve a ball, and landed on my right shoulder, which is my dominant hand, and the injury I sustained is a separation of my clavicle from my sternum.
Uh-huh.
And so I took a holistic or naturopathic approach to the healing, and got to a point where I wasn't making much progress, meaning that I was using chiropractors, masseuses, that sort of thing, opposed to general practitioner or orthopedic surgeons who wanted to try the less evasive approach first. Wasn't making much progress, then in August went to an orthopedic surgeon, had an MRI, and not only did he find the separation of the clavicle is very unmistakable because my collarbone actually protrudes out of my chest. So it didn't take a brain giant to figure out what was wrong with that. But what he also found was a torn rotator cuff and a lap 5 pair in my anterior bicep. I've been able to get past, and there's nothing they can do surgically for the separated collarbone. And I've been able to use.
What was it in
something.
The bicep? It's a torn rotator cuff, and then something in your bicep.
Yeah, there's a. It's called a lap 5 tear in my anterior bicep.
Okay.
So the clavicle, I've been able to use a gentleman that uses a technique called hanosomatic massage, which has really helped with the protrusion of the collarbone. It's, you know, at least shifted back over, back to the right, and it has started to go back down, and the pain is pretty much completely gone. And I do feel pain from the rotator cuff, and I actually believe I had that tear prior to this particular event, but I didn't know about the torn bicep. So my challenge is I'm able to play now. I started playing again in January, actually started hitting the ball, but I'm to the point where I'm trying to decide whether to start competing again in tournaments. In my block is I'm afraid, quite honestly, of fully extending on either forehand and backhand shots because I did of my and the fear is completely tearing the bicep off of the humerus bone. So,
yeah, it's a legitimate fear for sure.
Yeah. So,
is that what your doctor has said, or any, that you have to be careful of that?
Of course, he's protecting himself, of course. And
what's that? Can you speak a little louder?
Sure, he's protecting himself in that regard, and I appreciate that by saying that, you know, his recommendation, of course, is surgery to fix that. It's pretty invasive surgery. They have to make an incision under my armpit and actually go up and put screws in both of in some bones and then reattach that bicep, and then I'm immobile for a 3-month period, completely immobile. And
wow.
Just not willing to do that at this point. This isn't my livelihood. It is my passion, but not necessarily my livelihood.
I love racquetball. I play racquetball also. And so, I know the sport really well. I know there's a lot of diving that goes on and can be some radical moves that you have to make to get the ball.
Right.
So
I guess it's just there again. How do I? And I've tried my own techniques as far as visualization, but convincing myself is a little more difficult than maybe somebody else helping me convince myself that. And actually, I've eliminated the dive move out of my repertoire, if you will. I just play deeper in the court and force my opponent out of center court with more passing and wide angle shots. So, I mean, I don't have to dive as those opportunities just don't come up as much anymore. So, so that part, it's not so much. It's the full extension on drive serves and or backhands out of the back corner that I have this little hesitation. And that's all it amounts to is that, and you playing the sport know that it just takes that half second of hesitation and you're behind the ball, or in front of it, for that matter.
Yeah,
and,
what two moves did you say? The front extension?
Yeah, full extension on a drive serve. on a forehand drive serve.
Uh-huh.
And then deep in the back left corner, trying to make full extension on a backhand out of the backhand or out of the backhand corner. Just because it takes so much extra power and full extension, I just hesitate. It just takes that little split second of hesitation. And it's not a conscious thing, of course. It's a subconscious. I don't really recognize it until I hit an inappropriate shot, and then I relate it back to that. Well, you hesitated again. You didn't commit. So anyway.
Right.
That's my problem.
Yeah, are you playing in tournaments now again or just practice?
Just practicing at this point. One of my training partners, I have two training partners. He owns a club here in the town that I live in, and he's a retired tour player, racquetball. He was a professional racquetball player. So we've been trading some time because I have my business practice, so I've been helping him with some business suggestions, and he's been working with me on my game, trying to change my game to where I don't have to rely there again on the diving piece as well as hitting the ball as hard and playing a little smarter with position and shot selection. So, but my goal would be, yes, to be able to get back to a level to where I could compete in tournaments. Yeah.
Right. it sounds like there's those two shots that you're kind of working on. Yeah, the front extension on a drive serve, which is overhand. An overhand serve?
No, so it's just a drive serve. It's a lateral movement, actually.
Yeah, lateral movement, right.
Yeah.
And so, and then also deep in the back corner, making full extension with your right hand.
Yeah, on a backhand shot, right.
Yeah. One thing I was just wondering is, it's good to, kind of distinguish between good pain and bad pain with, kind of listening to your body. In my book, in your Performing Edge, there's a chapter on that, listening to your body and how you can, know that the good, bad pain is the type that has where you feel a sharp pain in a particular joint area, and that's something that is best to pay attention to or figure out a different way to do things. And the good pain, of course, is the pain of effort and overall muscle fatigue or tiredness or that sort of thing. That's the pain that you can work with. We can use our mental training techniques to work with. So I guess the key thing is to not do a lot of movements that are going to aggravate the injury, right? And to listen to your body and to be able to find out if, is this the good pain or bad pain? Is this just pain of kind of getting back into shape, or is it, or if you're causing a certain kind of pain, like with that, those two moves you mentioned, the front extension on the drive serve and the, and then deep in the back corner, is it a sharp pain that you feel sometimes, or does your body say, well, this is okay to make these moves?
I would say it's more of the sharp pain, the one to be the negative pain, if you will.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if you make those kind of moves, it sort of
right.
aggravates things.
Yes.
Yeah, so I guess your body might be telling you to hold off on those, or I guess the question is, maybe sometimes hesitation is a good thing. I think, we want to protect our bodies and your body's trying to heal, so it's giving you messages so that you don't, overextend when your body is still, trying to get better in that area. So sometimes it can be a matter of, you know, just going easier with those kind of moves until your shoulder and clavicle can fully heal, and as opposed to, you know, make, because the one thing that, you know, the big number one mistake that most athletes make is, you know, getting injured and then doing all this rehab at first. There's a lot of enthusiasm for rehabbing and doing exercises, and then when you think you're better, then oftentimes you think, okay, I'm better now. I don't need to do these, the rehab stuff anymore, or I can just go back to playing. And then there's all of a sudden your body doesn't get that support that you need from before. So oftentimes people get re-injured again or come back too soon. So if there's a way to make sure that you're, you know, you're allowing your body the time to heal and doing all the things that you need to accelerate the healing process, that would be really good. Have you been, like you say, that massage therapist and or physical therapist also, or someone to find out what things you can do yourself to accelerate the healing?
Yeah, actually, the owner of this health club that I mentioned, the retired racquetball player, he's also a kinesiologist, so he's developing a program to help increase my range of motion. So yes, I am continuing to try to not only re-strengthen all the muscles that surround that area and retrain them away from, because they're from total contraction, to where they can, you know, more release and contract more fluidly, I guess that's the goal anyway.
Uh-huh. Great. Yeah, that's really important.
Think the mental block is just my subconscious reaction to trying to protect that area? Is that?
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So we have to decide if it's a good thing to protect that area or if it's okay to kind of to make those moves, you know, the front extension and then deep in the back corner.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, you know, the body doesn't tell you that day. You probably noticed as an athlete when you're working out or when you're doing, you know, regular movements, you think, oh, well, it feels okay. This is good. You know, I can do this, this movement. But then the next day, it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Your body gives you the feedback the next day or sometimes 2 days later that, you know, you overdid it or extended too far. So it's always better to be conservative, I think, at first when you're, especially with an injury. So if you think something is, you're wondering, well, should I go this far or do this, hit the ball this hard or make this much of an extension? You know, it's always better to be a little conservative and, you know, cut it back by half or a quarter. In terms of intensity or speed or, you know, strength. So, are you there?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm here.
So kind of, I think a lot of it can be, this can be a really good exercise, Greg, in helping you to, you know, have that dialogue with the body about you know, where you're at and how much you can do, and then so the first step would be to make sure that it's okay with your body to kind of do those moves. And the one exercise you can do is to take the ask, you know, an exercise I call sort of becoming quiet and listening and kind of consulting with your body And so you kind of ask yourself if you, you know, because I think a lot of times the body has critical information for us, and, you know, we need to only listen carefully and then kind of listen to its messages, the softer messages, and then follow the direction that the body's giving you. And then so first check in with your body before just moving ahead. And I think it's important to, you know, in order to train consistently and to stay healthy, we need to treat our and care for our bodies kind of like a finely tuned sports car, you know, how it needs to be really finely tuned. So that's great that you're doing those exercises with the kinesiologist and to strengthen that area. It's really important. And then second thing is to do anything that you can to, with rehab type stuff like icing. Does icing help?
Definitely. Definitely icing helps.
Yeah. So, and that's something that's underrated, I think. You know, we don't hear much about it on, you know, on the news or on TV because it's free. And it's so readily accessible and free. You can go to, you probably have one, you know, you can go to any drugstore and get one of those pads that they have them now that go over your shoulder in that area.
Right.
That's just, and then you can ice and then put it back in. And most of the chiropractors and doctors I work with recommend icing for 10 to 20 minutes and then every 2 hours or so. But I think it's better to actually do it more often if you can. You know, say ice 10 minutes or until it feels numb or frozen, and then do it again the next an hour later. If you can do it every hour, that's even better. But if you can do it at least every 2 hours, you could just drape that thing, the icing, over your shoulder while you're, you know, if you're at home while you're working, kind of thing. So it's something you don't have to stop what you're doing. And icing is just a fantastic way to, of course, you probably know it accelerates the healing process really dramatically by freezing that area, and then as soon as you remove the ice, then the more blood flow comes to that area, increasing the circulation, and so you're pumping blood into that area, so it heals quicker. And then when you ice it again, then the blood goes away temporarily, but then as soon as you take the ice off again, it pumps it, it comes back in, so you're really accelerating things. So you could just try to ice. Most people think, okay, well, I iced once or that sort of thing, but it once is usually not enough. If you can do it, you know, several times a day, very often, you know, both for the clavicle and the shoulder, whatever you can do, that would be great. And then, yeah, as far as you know, hesitation about committing, if you can you think of a time, well, before the injury, when you were, you know, if your body says that it's okay, or let's say when you get to the point where it's you know, feels okay to make those kind of moves, that's when the mental part is really, well, the mental training can come in two ways. One is accelerating the healing process, actually, you know, imagining that there's more blood flow to that area, and also, you know, that everything's working correctly. And having an image of that, what needs to happen there. And then secondly, to, you know, imagine a time when you were when you were doing really well with your playing, and that you hadn't, if a time when you didn't have any hesitation with those moves. So do you know, first of all, with the healing process, Greg, did the doctor tell you or the therapist say what needs to happen for it to heal, and you know, what would a good healthy, what needs to happen in order for that healing process for it to come back to normal, like physiologically?
Well, of course, the orthopedic surgeon will only commit to the surgery.
So the orientation.
Right. Yeah, so he makes his money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I understand that. And, of course, with all the litigation issues that are involved in him suggesting I try it without, obviously that's not going to be as anywhere on the radar as far as the option is concerned. So, but the kinesiologist believes that, much like what you're saying, it's listening to that, you know, your inner voice, if you will, when there is healthy pain and unhealthy pain. And he explained it exactly as you did, to where, you know, if it's sharp and if it's sharp, that there's something meaningful there. Whereas if it's normal muscle soreness from either overexertion or being out of shape, then that's a different type of message. So his plan is to create this regime of movements to increase my range of motion and strengthen those muscles that support that joint or those two joints, and then to see if we can alleviate the negative pain, if you will, the sharp pain.
Right.
And then at that point, he believes that once that sharp pain is gone, then the healing process should be complete.
Yeah. So, I agree with that, and that's good that you're working with him for sure. As far as the hesitation with those moves, can you tell me about a time when you were, before you got this injury, were you real smooth with those the drive serve and the left back corner?
Not always with the drive serve, but definitely with the backhand. That's one of my favorite shots, actually. So I've always had a lot of confidence in that shot and never had any pain. The forehand, I think, because, like I say, I believe I've had a torn rotator cuff probably since my college days as a pitcher in baseball. But I've lived with it, you know, up to this point in time anyway. But but I wasn't aware of the torn bicep, so.
So the backhand, one of your favorite shots, a lot of comments. Can you tell me about a time when you did that backhand shot and it felt really good? You just either in a tournament or in practice, just kind of give me the play-by-play or what that was like for you to hit it really well.
Sure. Well, it's a matter of tracking along, and my favorite shot is when one of my opponents will leave the ball up off the back wall to where it bounces off the back wall and then is deep in that back left corner to where I can get behind it and then stride into it and with my racket held high and then with a complete follow-through after a perfect impact. You know, there's that zone with it.
Can you say that again? I just want to write that down here to, you know, so I can give it to you in a visualization here. So the ball bounces off the back wall.
Yeah, so the ball comes towards you, past you, and then rebounds off the back wall, and then heads back towards the front wall.
Okay.
And then it's just a matter of getting my body into position, which includes getting the racket up high, and of course in the proper hitting position with your knees bent correctly. And then trying to line yourself up to where the contact point is going to be exactly where it needs to be. So you're moving your, you know, little baby steps with your feet, getting into position to strike the ball in the perfect hitting zone.
Right.
And then after contact, it's the complete follow through. That right now is that painful part, or that little sharp pain. If I overextend on the follow-through is where the pain is, but I've not experienced that in the past.
Okay.
So I can remember when it didn't hurt, and now, of course, I know, well, at least I hesitate. It doesn't hurt every time. It's just when I, either if I don't get in the right hitting position or, there again, have to overextend to reach for the ball, or I'm out of balance on the follow-through, and then I can feel that uncomfortable pain.
Okay. So a lot of it's getting in the right position to, in that way you can protect your body, right? Protects your shoulder from
right.
having to overwork or overextend.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So a lot of it's using your experience and your brain. It uses your whole body to protect that one part of your body.
Right.
Get into the right position, and so you've done that before, yeah, really well. And can you remember a time when it was like a real critical shot or an important shot in a game?
I'd have to give more thought to that. I mean, it comes up often, actually, because
Like when it goes over the corner, your opponent says, "Oh no, here it comes."
Right. Yeah.
So the more you can get, so how can you use your body to protect your shoulder even more? Just getting into that right position.
That's primary. Yeah, and that's true of the forehand as well. Because anytime I'm out of balance with my body or my footwork. That's when it forces you to, there again, overreach or overextend and puts extra pressure on both those joints, actually.
Okay.
And your elbow, too, for that matter. So, I guess that's the primary focus, or what should be my primary focus as we have this conversation, is concentrate more on my body position and balance, and then the rest should follow through.
Yeah, because your body's saying, you know, your shoulder's saying, oh, no, don't hurt me again.
Right.
I think that's probably where the hesitation's coming in. But if you can get into the right body position, you know, so that you don't have to overextend or be out of balance, then you can hit a better shot and also protect your shoulder, still
right.
play and still be able to not hurt yourself further.
Right.
Right? So let's why don't we just imagine that for a moment? Let's do imagine that we're doing. I want to do a short visualization for you to demonstrate to everyone how to do this. And then Alex, are you still on the line too?
I'm here. Yes.
Okay, good. Then maybe you can come up with an example if you'd like, or something you'd like to work on too. We could do that afterwards. Yeah, I just wondered if Gio joined us at all, or if anyone else has joined us, because he wanted to be a volunteer as well, but I think he might have gotten the time wrong or something with his being in the UK, but maybe he'll join us in a little bit. So Greg, just imagine now we're doing a visualization here, and close your eyes, and so I'll record while we're recording this whole talk anyway. But in this case, I would say, Greg, just let your eyes gently close and just find a comfortable position in the chair. I'll do an abbreviated version here for you. And just imagine taking a deep breath, put one hand on your abdomen, so a couple inches below your belly button. Imagine that there's a balloon inside your stomach, and as you breathe in, gently fill up the balloon with air. And then as you breathe out, let the balloon collapse back down. Let your body feel supported by the chair. Good, and just focus on that breathing. And then we'll do a centering technique. So as you breathe in with your next breath, breathe in through your nose, focus on your center. And then just breathe out through your mouth and relax. So breathe in through your nose, focus on your center, just a couple inches behind your belly button, your center of energy, so you feel really grounded. And then breathe out through your mouth and relax. And just imagine there's tiny valves, special openings at the ends of your fingertips and toes. So you can always let out the tension there. And now, Greg, just imagine that you are playing one of your best games or practices with racquetball, and see yourself doing your backhand, one of your favorite shots. Bring all five senses into the experience and see yourself there. Can you feel the power in your body? Can you feel the confidence in your footwork and in your shots and lining up your shots? And you see yourself now, you can also bring in your auditory sense and hear the sound of the ball, the echo in the room, the racquetball room there, playing. And you can bring in your visual sense so you can see, keeping your eye on the ball at all times and being able to notice your surroundings there, notice what the room looks like, what it smells like, what it feels like. Bring in your kinesthetic sense so you can feel how, when you're getting in just that right body position, how you can hit that sweet spot on the with your racket to the ball. And you see yourself there now, you're doing your favorite shot, that backhand. You're deep in the back left corner, making your full extension on your backhand. The ball is coming to you, and it bounces. The ball bounces off the back wall and heads toward the front wall, and you get your body into just the right position. With your knee bent correctly, you rack it up high. You're taking small steps with your feet to just position yourself just right. And so you get your racket in just that right position, following the ball perfectly. And now feel yourself striking the ball in that perfect hitting position. And feel what that is like to really nail it against the wall with speed and with accuracy. Good. Now let's do that one more time. See yourself now going back. Let's say another ball is coming back toward the wall, and you're hitting, the ball is bouncing it off the wall, heads toward the front wall, and you get your body into position now, and your racket is up high, your knee is bent correctly, and taking those small steps with your feet. And you're getting in just the right position there. See yourself even more confident now this time, even more focused, and bringing your body, getting your body into the right position so that your shoulder doesn't have to do all the work. Your body can do the work for you. And you're using your body in a really intelligent way to get yourself in that perfect hitting position. And working on your body, working on your footwork, just that right body position and that correct balance so that everything is in balance for you and you can use your body in the best, most efficient way you can. You're focusing on this. And now feel yourself just striking that ball in the perfect hitting position and seeing the ball going where you want it to go with speed and just that accurate placement of the ball. Good. Taking some deep breaths now, Greg. And imagine now, let's do a success anchor. Can you create a color, a shape, a word, or an image, or a physical gesture, something to remember this experience by, something to associate it with. Think of some sort of anchor so you can remember this. And then each time you do your racquetball, playing in your practice and in your games, you can use that success anchor to bring in all those feelings of confidence and power and inner strength. It'll be right there. You'll have that feeling of getting in the right position, right body and footwork, and the right positioning and balance. So So everything is in balance for you. So you're protecting your body, and so each part of your body is doing its job to support all the other parts of your body. Good. Take in some deep breaths now, and all these things we've visualized here, they'll begin to translate into real and positive, tangible changes in your playing and your and every part of your life. And now just imagine walking up a set of stairs from 1 to 5, and each stair you feel more alert, more awake and refreshed. Just start with stair 1, and stair 2, feel more awake, stair 3, and stair 4, feeling good. And stair 5, you can begin to open your eyes and come back in the room. Good, so welcome back. Greg, how did that feel?
Very good, thank you. I was able to put myself in the racquetball court and experience the five senses, and I anchored it actually to a mantra that I use. And
a mantra that you use?
Yeah, I have a mantra that I use.
What is that? Can you share that with us if you care to?
It's the word pop, P-O-P. So I use it. I've been using it to try and make perfect contact. So I just think of the word pop, and that just helps me align and look for that, as you called it, the sweet spot in the hitting zone.
Uh-huh.
So that just helps me. So this just gave me some more reinforcement for that, the mantra that I use.
Great. Yeah, I like that. Pop, that's perfect for racquetball.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So good, you can associate that. So that's good, you could bring in all your five senses?
Yes.
Experiences, yeah. Great, because a lot of people, when they first get started, they might not close their eyes, they might not be able to see anything. So at first, so the fact that you can see it all really well means you're really ahead of the game here. So that's great. So you can use this visualization, and if you were a client, I would say I'll email it to you right away, so that you can play it right before you go to sleep at night. And then what you were thinking about before you dream, what you're thinking about before you go to sleep tends to be what you'll dream about, so that your subconscious mind can be working on it for the next several hours as you're sleeping. And so you can really be working on not only your playing, but also your healing process. And if we were working together longer, you know, as a client, I would also probably do another visualization to accelerate the healing process. You know, just imagining the accelerated blood flow to that area, and imagining that there's, all the tendons and ligaments and, you know, connective tissue that need to heal, that they're all healing in the right way, and creating, you know, flexibility and having that strength and also flexibility, that rubber band kind of feet character that, the good connective tissue needs to be able to, you know, be strong and yet also have that good range of motion that you've been talking about. So, you know, I would do a visualization around that as well. So, so great. So you could see it there, see that backhand, all the details of it?
Yes, very clearly, yeah.
Okay, good, yeah. So I think that could help. So I wouldn't use the word, hesitation in the visualization or anything. I wouldn't say, like, without hesitation, because like you said, that's a word, that's something that you want to, get past and be able to be really smooth. I forgot to use the word smooth, but that would be a good word too to use in a visualization. Because that's kind of the opposite of hesitation, is that, you know, smooth flowing reaction, action across the court and all, and using your whole body to protect, you know, so that it's every part of the body is doing its job. great, yeah. Was that? Glad that was, hopefully that was helpful for you.
Yes, thank you very much.
Yeah, and I don't know, Alex, do you have any responses or anybody, ideas to help Greg, or any, do you have any responses to how that was done?
No, I mean, I think you did a great job to slow down the process and bring us a positive image. Yeah, it's great. Sometimes they wonder if, because I have a different type of training, the idea of an experience, rather, of just mildly feeling the slight discomfort and then take a pause and just be with the discomfort. Because eventually the body will find its way towards healing. What usually happens is that we anticipate the big pain, and therefore we avoid what's happening next. And I think having a positive imagery helps to move forward. But sometimes the body, kind of holds back, kind of freezes with the expectation that pain is going to happen next. So what I sometimes do is I bring the sensory awareness of, in a very slow motion, going into the process of the injury itself. So I would, for example, if I fell, for example, I would, for example, bring the image of I am about to fall, and then freeze the image, and then bring awareness to what happens in my body at that moment. And then the body will, if it takes a pause, the body will begin to do its internal work. So anyway, I don't want to make it too complicated.
Yeah, great. Okay,
but,
so that's some other ideas.
It's a different type of work.
Good. Okay, so, Alex, do you have something? Do you want to be a volunteer too? And
sure, yeah. I have a couple of cases. Either one could be a client or could be me.
why don't we imagine that you're the client? Did you want to share work with you or share a client?
Let's do mine. Might as well get a freebie. All right. So I play golf for a long, long time, and I started when I was 10 years old, many moons ago.
Uh-huh.
But I haven't been playing much lately for the past almost 20 years. My game is really going downhill and quickly.
Haven't played for 20 years?
For the past 20 years, yeah, it's going bad.
Okay.
I just don't practice. I play maybe, if I like it, 10 rounds per year.
Uh-huh.
So my game is going down very, very inconsistent. But in the back of my mind, I have the expectation that I'm going to play well, because I used to play well.
Uh-huh.
But then I have a lot of thoughts coming through my mind when I am about to play. Part of them is, I know I can do well, but part of them is, I'm fearful of making another mistake like the ones I've been making for the past X number of years. So I have this kind of wonderful expectation, but then I have this fear of making a mistake again. So what happens is
fear of making another mistake?
Yeah, because in golf, ideally is to hit the ball straight.
Uh-huh.
But I either pull hook, meaning a hook shot, meaning to the left, or slice, meaning all the way out to the right.
Uh-huh.
But that usually happens is because I kind of I lose trust. So rather than having a fluid motion, I just let go of any thoughts and just trust my golf swing. Then most likely I would hit a good shot, but because I had this fear of my ball going the wrong direction, exactly as what happens.
it goes the wrong direction. right.
So I have this. I don't know how to get rid of this all these thoughts and hesitations and the added expectations and pressure that I put on myself of wanting to hit a good shot. Because all these factors, the only thing they do is to add more pressure in my golf swing. So it becomes more rigid or faster, less fluid, and all the negative things that are required in a nice, in otherwise fluid swing.
Yeah, okay. So are you playing by yourself or out there or with others?
I play some friends sometimes, and I mean, I play with a couple of friends who I should be beating them by 15 strokes easily. And because I play badly, then I'm sometimes become more concerned about how they are doing. And then I say to myself, why am I not beating them by 15 strokes? So rather than just letting go and just play my game, I become more focused on their playing just like I am, or at least scoring just like I am, which is quite poorly.
Yeah.
But my mind is completely into a different outside of where I'm supposed to be concentrating, or at least letting go. So I'm allowing all these thoughts to interfere rather than just play thought-free and trust what I know what to do.
Yeah, exactly. Was there a time when, you know, 20 years ago when you were playing, or that you played really well?
Yeah, I used to play 4 handicap.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
So
at that moment it was quite simple. Well, then I was practicing very often, I mean, almost 6 days a week.
Say that again?
That was when I was in high school. So I used to play, 6 days a week. I mean, very, very frequently.
Okay.
And also I had a different, my body, a different kind of different flexibility. I don't have the flexibility of an 18-year-old kid anymore.
Right.
I kind of lost it. So there's a lot of issues. One, I don't have the flexibility, so I don't have the swing that I had then. Now it's different. And my body does not respond the way it used to. So it's, So I kind of want to be like when I was 18, but I know my body cannot respond. So I have to make changes. But making changes require practice. So the muscles can memorize the new movement. And because I don't practice, then I start thinking about what I should be doing. So it becomes more mechanical swing process.
Yeah. So maybe when just in the background, when I guess you could go. I mean, one option is to take a lesson or that kind of thing to get back to.
And I've taken quite a few lessons from different professionals.
Oh, okay.
Of course, each one of them gives me a different idea.
Yeah. Right.
And what usually happens is it gets things worse and worse because each one of them has his or her own contribution, which adds more to my thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
So now I have the thought that Professor X told me, the thought that Professor X told me, the thought Professor Z told me. So I have all these different thoughts, all good of them, I'm sure. But because I don't practice neither one of them consistently, then I come to the golf course then thinking, well, okay, I'm supposed to do this and that, and what about this? And so I start thinking, and the worst thing that a golf player, or any other athlete for that matter, that can do is to create or bring thoughts.
Can you tell me about a time, Alex, when you played really well in high school? I think if we could bring those memories to the forefront here, and you could have an image in your mind, even though it was a long time ago, you probably still have those images there if you were playing regularly, you can remember, at least remember all the, playing fluidly and relaxed and that kind of thing. Can you remember one of your best tournaments in high school?
The best tournament.
Or games?
Yeah, one day I played very well. I forget what I shot. I think 70 or 71. So.
If you could speak a little bit louder.
I'm sorry?
So that gets on the recording here, that'd be great.
Yeah, I play quite well. I was just fully trusting just my swing, just standing over the ball, and all I had to do is look at the target and look at the ball, and just the body would know exactly what to do. There was not much thought. I would just stand, move start the backswing, and then just unleash my left side of the body, and the arms would just flow by themselves with no effort whatsoever.
Okay, so this is good. Yeah, because it helps for me to know your language. I mean, you know, there's the general language of golf, but to understand how you see it, how you experience it, what your vision of it is. So you had the. Can you remember one particular hole or game? When you just hit the ball just right. Can you describe that to me?
Yeah, there was a. I hit is. Let's see. I remember one shot, but I remember the end result. I mean, I don't remember exactly my swing. I made it from 170 yards out.
Made it from what?
I made it into the hole from 170 yards out.
Wow, a hole in one?
No, it was a par five, so I made an eagle.
Uh-huh. So can you describe it to me, kind of the play-by-play? For a moment, you know, just so you're walking up to the, are you doing your pre-shot routine first?
Yeah, it was basically, I remember it was a 6-iron. It's a downhill shot. I saw the flag very clearly, and I just stood over the ball. All I did is, just swung the arms.
Can you speak a little bit louder?
I just swung the club very very fluidly. I just released. I started my swing with started with the lower body and my legs. I just released a complete follow rotation of my shoulders, and I just saw the ball just flying just beautifully. It was a great shot.
Uh-huh.
And hit on the green and skipped maybe a couple of times and went into the hole. But I remember the impact, the swing, how I finished the golf swing was ideal. It was perfect. So it's not just how I started the swing, but how I ended it as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So that was you talking about the last shot then into the hole.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember what it felt like to hit the ball just right?
I was excited. I thought it was great. I remember raising my two hands and I was. I had actually had practiced that same shot in my driving range before. And I said to one of my partners, hey, this is the shot I was practicing. And they were making fun of me. I was practicing it, what can I tell you? This is actually my 6-iron is my favorite of all the golf clubs. That's my favorite one.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you start with your lower body, and then a complete rotation of your body and shoulders and
mm-hmm.
impact. Just kind of hitting that sweet spot again. Can you remember what it felt like to hit the ball just right? What was the sound or the feeling of the ball on the club? Or, your club hitting the ball? I mean, was it kind of a, or just did it feel real light or heavy or?
Well, it's a, well, I don't remember exactly. I know it's an effortless contact. Is the club making contact with the golf ball, and first and this a perfect equilibrium of the body, the lower body releasing first, and then the hands stay behind,
mm-hmm.
And then the upper body follows. You can feel actually the contact with your hands and the golf club, and the face of the club, golf club, just making contact with the ball and see it flying. The contact is very pure.
Yeah.
Even this you can tell by the sound of it.
You can tell by the sound of it.
Yeah, but the sound of the golf or the face of the club making contact with the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great sound, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's just do a quick visualization of that, and so that you can bring that into, you know, your experience now, because I think since you have that real clear vision of what you did experience, even though it was 20 years ago, it doesn't matter. I think the powerful thing about visualization and imagery is that if you have an image, you know, that you can remember, and you know, just remembering the right brain is really good at you know, that seeing the whole picture and just having that experience and that feeling of doing it all right. Then you can bring that into your game now, into your playing, without necessarily, and it can help you to kind of let go of those, you know, not have to think so much, because if you have this real clear picture in your mind, that oftentimes the picture just kind of takes care of itself, you know, and you have this picture, and then, like you say, your body knows what to do. Your body sort of fills in all of the details,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So okay, so here we go. So just imagine. So if I was, I would do a visualization here, and so we'll just do a practice visualization for you right now. So and to demonstrate to all of you on the call what you know, how I would work with you as a golfer here. Because golf is one of the really sports that I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people on our coaches in our Performing Edge Coach Group work with. So golf is really relevant to everyone. And it's, as you know, such a mental sport and such a frustrating sport. You could have clients for life because it takes so long to get it right, right?
That's true.
And that it goes, you know, you can be really great one day and mess up the next. You know, even the best golfers are like that. And then, so it's that ability to be able to just come back and recover easily. So, so you there, Alex?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, okay. And so just take a couple deep breaths. Now we'll do the visualization. So let your eyes gently close and just imagine yourself in a chair, and imagine that there's an accordion, a vertical accordion running down your spine. So as you breathe in, let the accordion expand outward. As you breathe out, let the accordion come back together. And just breathe in, let the accordion expand out, fill up with air, and breathe out, let it come back together. So with each breath, you feel more and more relaxed, more focused. And then, Alex, take yourself to that time in high school. Bring that into the present tense now. So see yourself there. You were in high school. You're playing a 4 handicap. You've got so much flexibility, and you're fully trusting your swing. Bring all 5 senses into the experience. So you see yourself there out on the golf course. You're feeling strong, feeling focused and good. And your body knows exactly what to do. You have that trust there. So bring in your visual sense. You can see a beautiful golf course out there, the green grass, the blue sky, and notice the temperature in the air. And bring in your auditory sense so you can hear the sound of your voice, hear the sound of your club hitting the ball, hear the birds perhaps in the trees around you. You know, just a great experience of all five senses. And bring in your kinesthetic sense, your sense of touch, so you can feel what it's like to hit a great shot. Feel your hands on the club. Feel your body in just the right position. Feel your rotation of your body and your shoulders. All of that comes into play with as you're out there. And you see yourself hitting that one shot, the 160-yard shot, 160 yards out. Put yourself there right now. You're there 100% in your mind, body, and spirit. And so, Alex, you see yourself there. It's hitting that last shot and using your 6-iron, your favorite iron. And it's a downhill shot. You see it clearly there in front of you. You've done your pre-shot routine. You're all ready to go, and you see yourself clearly. You see the shot clearly, exactly what you need to do. You're trusting in your body that you know what to do. And you take in some deep breaths. You start with your lower body. And you're looking at the target, looking at the ball. You're doing everything just correctly. And it just comes to you so naturally. You have that complete rotation of your body and shoulders. And your upper body following. And your mind is clear. You're mentally focused and physically relaxed. So you start with your lower body, then the complete rotation of your body and shoulders. Everything is in sync for you. The impact, you feel that impact, the effortless contact of your club, making contact with the golf ball, following through, finishing that swing. The contact is so pure. You see the ball flying through the air, and the sound of the face of the club making contact, and you see it flying, going straight toward the hole. And you see it moving and then going right into the hole. And you're feeling so ecstatic. What a fantastic feeling, an adrenaline rush. And you feel great inside. You're raising both of your hands, knowing that, yes, I did it. I could do this. And you feel so good inside. Let's do that one more time. And, Alex, I want you to see your shot, this time even more clearly, bringing in more of your five senses and sharpening your senses so that it really, when we do it the second time now, it can really internalize it into your body and mind and spirit. So you're 170 yards out, you're using your 6-iron, it's a downhill shot, you see it clearly, and you start with your lower body doing your pre-shot routine. You know exactly what to do. You have that trust there. Your mind is relaxed. Your body is focused and ready to go. And you're feeling strong inside. Feeling so good inside your body. And you feel calm and at peace. You're feeling, as a golf player, you're feeling strong and powerful. You're light and fluid. And your mind is tuned into the moment. You have this acute awareness of what is going on right now. And you're feeling optimistic and positive. You've done your practice. You're ready to go. You have that acute awareness of everything going on within you and all around you. And you're feeling as you're out there on the golf course looking down 170 yards, you're feeling natural and spontaneous, embracing the task at hand. You are energized, and you're feeling fun and enjoyable. Golf is exactly what you know how to do. You have this absolute composure as you're getting ready to play the shot. Your only focus is on this one shot. You are an automatic pilot. And as you take your backswing to get ready to go, you have this effortless speed in your shot, speed and accuracy. You are feeling invincible. You have this total self-confidence in your shot, trusting that your body knows what to do. And you're floating. Your club is floating with ease through the air. You're completely engaged in what you're doing, in complete control. And now as your club comes through and you have that complete rotation of your body and your shoulders and your upper body following your lower body, you feel the impact, that effortless contact, your club making contact with the golf ball, and you're following through completely. You're finishing your swing. This contact is so pure. You see the ball flying, and you hear the sound of the club making contact with the ball. And you feel you are in the zone. You're in perfect control. You have an ideal sense of well-being as you see the ball flying through the air, going into the hole. And everything falls into place for you now, Alex. As you see the ball going into the hole, you feel fully alive. You are ecstatic. And raising both hands, you can have that be your anchor, if you'd like, your success anchor, something to remember this experience by. Or you can create any kind of anchor that you would like, something, a color, a shape, a word, or something, or that physical gesture, raising both hands, or the feeling of the club in your hand, anything that you would like, something to anchor to and associate that feeling of success. And see yourself now, Alex, as you're going out playing. You can carry that image with you for your game, your current practice now, as you're playing your golf. That all these things that you visualized here when you're in high school, they can transfer now into your playing currently and into every aspect of your life. So we can complete that visualization now, and I would say, of course, that, you know, if you're a client, that I'd email that to you, and that you can use it at nighttime and also before your practice and before your games. So how'd that go, Alex? Welcome back.
That's good. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, good. Okay. So then, you could see it there.
Yeah, very
going
clear.
Out
yeah,
and
yeah. It really helped to go over twice.
What's that?
It really helped to go over twice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good.
Do you usually do that?
Yeah. So that if it's something that's a really fast, you know, if it's a marathon or something that somebody's doing, then obviously there's a lot going on for miles and miles and miles. you know, I just do that once. But if it's a short shot, an action that it takes a very short time, like a golf swing, then I would go over it twice, yeah, so that,
okay.
Yeah, so you kind of get to practice it again in your mind, and it crystallizes it more, I think. And then I added some other, you know, my phrases in there, too, from things I've written about so that I could, you know, kind of enhance the experience for you there, feeling, you know, in the zone and all of that.
Yeah, that's very nice. Well, thank you. All right, cool.
So, great. Okay, yeah, that was good. And then did you create an anchor, like raising your hands, or what would be the best success anchor for you, something to remember this experience by?
Yeah, there was an image of just the when I was making contact with the ball.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the ideal image of the lower body rotated and the hands following through an impact and in perfect balance. Yeah.
Your lower body rotating and your hands?
Yeah, the hands just moving through impact while maintaining the perfect balance at the moment of making contact with the ball. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Great. Okay, good. Yeah, okay, I'm glad that was helpful. Yeah, I know, Greg, I think, do you work with golfers too?
Yes, much like Alex, it's something I haven't done much of in the last 10 years as far as playing goes, but I love to go over to the golf course and hit balls and practice putting, and a great way to release, you know, from the day, if you will, because as you mentioned, golf is a very mental sport. All sports are, but I think golf may be more than any. Hmm. So I really, because you have to be totally focused and 100% concentration on the moment. So that's what I enjoy about even the practice part of it, because you still have to maintain focus. So it helps you alleviate everything else that's going on in the world and just be present. Yeah, so I love golf.
Yeah, it's great. It's like a mental exercise, right?
Yeah, really.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Focusing exercise. Even if you don't have a great result, you know, exactly the result you want with the ball, it's an exercise. And you're always trying, always improving, and, you know, just always working on your mind, your mental abilities to focus, which I think helps with everything, with other things you do in life too, right?
Right.
So this is what usually you do, Joanne, that you, even though it happened a long time ago, you bring a positive image or memory of way back then to create a positive visualization?
Yeah, I think it's if you can have your client work with any kind of image they have, it can be just recently or it could be 20 years ago, you know, just something that they remember vividly, if possible, then that's the most important thing, is that they have some sort of vivid image in their mind of a time when they played well, and then just really draw as much detail as you can from the client of all that, and try to get their words. And so, you know, as you were, I've got a headset on, of course, which is really important. If you can use a headset when you're working with clients, if you're working with them on the phone, then as they're telling you about their story, you know, I'm typing in your phrases and what you're using, so I can try to be as accurate as I can and make it more your voice. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm doing the visualization, so I'm, you know, saying back the words that you've given me. That way, it makes it much more personalized for the person. And then if I I could do a visualization of just that past experience, and then at the end say, you know, you can carry this with you into current ones. Or if you're working with the client more, you know, for a second session, if I had more time, then like Alex, if I was working with you, then I would say for a second session, then I could do another visualization for your current playing. So you've got both, you know, one visualization of the past high school game that you can bring in now, and then also one for, you know, now, if you can think of even one moment when you were doing really well, you know, currently. More recent one, that I tried to bring that out too.
Okay.
Or it just practice now using those same, you know, good images from the past in, you know, in your current playing.
Okay.
I do another visualization around that, you know, say, because you're, you know, you've got, like you say, you're older now, you have a different body, and maybe the movements are a little bit slower or not quite as flexible, but still you can have that same, you know, work toward that same focus, and you can still have the same mental concentration, I think, and all those things, and still use your mind to get a better performance out of your body.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So great. Okay. Well,
yeah, thank you.
We're just about ready to wrap up here. Any other final questions or that you have? Or
I'm good.
Okay. Good. If you want to just share anything, what was most helpful for you with this session today, with our the mock session? Each of you could just go around and just say what. You know, one nugget that maybe you learned from this, or that would be great.
I guess from my end, I like to. I was interested to hear you just the repeating the same visualization, in this case twice. It was really very, I mean, powerful. The allowing at least my process to zero in with more details when you were going over the same visualization again. So I thought it was very, very nice.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I think the mind, you know, repetition is really important, is a key thing for, you know, learning new habits and keeping those habits. If you can have your clients, or if you can repeat something, you know, the image over visualization a couple times, that helps. And also same thing with power words, with phrases. If you go through one, you know, say them each twice, then that kind of repetition really helps, I think, to helps the client to internalize the whole process.
Yeah. Cool.
So, Greg?
Thank you. Very nice.
For me, it was, I was actually able to get a very clear image, of course, going through the process of what you do on your end, meaning, and I think the piece for me was the note-taking, to find those keywords or key phrases and make special note of those. And then what I have to practice, I recognize, is your ability to take those phrases and turn them into sentences and or a story, a complete paragraph, if you will, that is meaningful and will be meaningful in the visualization. So I guess is the piece about, there again, just grabbing those chunks of information that are meaningful to the client and then being able to restructure that into a story, if you will, or a very good, clear vision, so that obviously you can recreate something or give them the ability to create something in their mind.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to summarize it. I appreciate that, Greg. Yeah. At first you might, you know, when you're practicing this, you could do it, so a client tells you the information, and then you could, you know, think about it, write something down, and then do a visualization afterward. But as you get better at it, you can just do it on the fly, do it right there, like I did with you guys, where I just write out phrases, and then I'm basically reading the phrases and kind of, I'm trying to get into the experience myself, too. I think that really helps if you can imagine yourself in their shoes, in their situation, and just create a story right there and try to, you know, just not just read the words, but, you know, really express them, you know, imagine yourself there, you know, so your voice kind of goes up and down, and so you're not just, you know, monotone, but you're really expressive, and that helps, too, for the client to get into the experience and kind of get excited so that's all something that you can experiment with too. So
sorry, question. So in your real practice, then you would do an audio tape of this visualization right there and then send it right away?
Yeah, that's what I do in my sessions. Is I do the MP3 right away in that first session, and if it's clients on the phone, then I'll record it as I'm taking them through the experience right there, because I think it's important to. It's very helpful for the client to if you say, well, I'll do the visualization for you later, and I'll email it to you. You know, there's not as much chance that they'll actually listen to it because they haven't experienced it yet. But if you can actually do it with them right there in the session, that first session, then you capture their attention, and they realize how powerful it is. Usually, they have a real transformation in that first session. So you're doing two things at once. It's a good use of your time. You're taking them through this exercise live, so they get the experience of it, and you're also recording it so that they get the tool to use afterward. So you're doing two things at once, and also, well, the third thing you're doing is getting their buy-in of the increasing their belief that this really works, and because you're kind of doing it together with them live.
How do you structure your time? Because when you see a client, you do it within the, let's say, I don't know how long you see the client for. Do you see it for a typical 50 minutes or so, or for a longer time? Or
About usually an hour.
An hour?
yeah, okay. So the first session I do, you know, an assessment, kind of like I was doing with each of you at first about what the problems are. And then that first session I would... you know, go through that peak performance, a time when they were felt really good. I do that maybe, halfway through the session or so, half hour into it, then I'd start the visualization, which would take about 10 to 15 minutes, or sometimes I'll wait till like 40. Just depends on how the conversation is going. If we're really into a heavy conversation, which often you are the first time, then wait till maybe 40 minutes or 45 minutes after, and then do the visualization, which would take about 10 minutes, and then leave 5 to 10 minutes afterward for debriefing. So that they get a chance to talk about their experience, and then you can and tell them how to use the MP3 and all. And so if I was on the phone, then I would say I'm going to email this to you right away, and I try to get it to them within the next 5 minutes or so afterward, which they're very impressed with, and that really builds trust that they know you're following through with what you said you'd do, and they've got this tool right away. Or if they're in the office here with me, then I would you know, I'll just say to them that I'll email it to them right afterward as well. So I'll do it, and then I can email it right away to them as well right then. So, and then I always give them a chance to, you know, ask questions and that kind of thing. And that first session, typically I'll go over time, actually more like an hour, 15 minutes or so, sometimes an hour, 20 minutes, so that I get a really good assessment of what's going on and really have a chance to build a good rapport with them, because that first session is really when they're making the decision about whether to they want to continue to work with you or not. So that first session, you're doing a lot of work. It's like a rocket launching, you know, from the earth. It takes a lot of most of the energy just to get it off the ground into space, and then once you're off, it's into space, then it's like off and rolling and floating, much less energy required after that. So if you can really put a lot of time and focus into that first session, then I think you really build a connection with the client, and they see that you can really do something for them, and they really have a good experience with you, then they'll be much more likely to continue on that next session. And I would always say at the end, you know, tell them what's coming for the next session. So find something that they talked about there in the first session that they want to continue on, continue working on. And you can also summarize, you know, the things that you saw in the session, the areas that you can work on with them. And then also give them a sense of hope. That's one of the most important things, is the feeling that they leave with. If you can give them a sense of hope and tell them what their strengths are, you know, a basic question clients are leaving with is, do you think I'm a hopeless case? Or do you think you can really help me? Or do you think there's a way that I can get better here? That's what most clients are, that's the question in their mind. So you really want to give them, at the end, draw on the strengths that you've seen, any positive things that you've noticed about the qualities that they have, and then things that they've done right in the past, or ways that they worked through problems in the past, or if you notice that they're really focused or they seem to really be determined, in a past situation, you know, just bring those things up and try to bring out the good qualities that you see, and then give them a sense of hope that, see, we can do, create an action plan of some sort. We can... over the next 8 to 10 weeks or whatever, we can do A, B, and C based on, you know, what you said here. So try to create some sort of action plan that where they can have an expectation that, okay, this is what I'm going to do. And then, but you can also be flexible if they're saying, well, my funds are limited, maybe I can only do 3 or 4 sessions, and say, okay, well, then here's what we can do for that. You know, just be able to work with them, but give them a sense of hope that, yeah, I see that you've got huge potential here for increasing, you know, for improvement based on what I see, and then list the specific things, A, B, and C, that you've noticed.
Mm.
So, yeah, is that helpful?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
very much.
So,
thank you.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, great.
No, I was agreeing. That was
good, yeah. So, so you're doing a lot of things in that first session, and then the second session you can come back and you do more. It's more problem solving and coming back and listening to what they have to say and working. They may have a particular tournament or game coming up, or they got some improvement, but then they have problems in another area. You're doing a lot of work and then you can basically go through if the client has a lot that they're working on that they bring up, then that's fine. They can kind of direct the session based on what things they need to work on. If they don't have that, then you can go through the book. Your Performing Edge book is 26 chapters or so there, and you can basically go through one chapter each time and work with them in a structured way to go through that the chapters in the book for them to learn the different skills, or especially in section 2 with the 3 P's, the positive images, power words, present focus, is always a good thing to start with. And then you can pick out you don't have to do all the chapters, you could do certain select chapters in the book and have them read those and listen and go through the different exercises. At the end of most chapters in the book, there's, you know, those gray boxes with exercises for people to do, so you can give them those exercises to do.
Okay, perfect.
So, okay, well, great. Well, good talking with all of you. And, our next session will be on the, let's see, or our next call will be April 24th.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So, same time, 9 o'clock.
Great.
And remember, do your taxes if you're in the U.S., April 15th. Mental training for that. We all hate doing taxes, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's always a challenge. But I'm sure you all do fine. So,
right.
Great. Okay, good talking with you.
Yeah,
my
question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Alex and
welcome.
Greg, for being volunteers here.
Absolutely.
For your time. Yeah, that was really helpful to go through those things with you. So, okay, we'll talk to you next time then.
Okay, take care, Greg.
Thanks. Okay, bye.
See you later, Alex. Have a great week.
Bye.